Hi, this is James Mercer from The Shins.
This is Shirley Manson.
This is Lo Tullist, co-founder of The Cure.
This is Huey Lewis giving you the story behind the song.
The Story Behind the Song is back with an exciting second season. We peel back the layers on music's most iconic hits with legendary artists like The Killers, Heart, The B-52s, Violent Femmes, Jewel, Huey Lewis, Modern English, and more. To keep the music flowing, we'll be sprinkling in classic episodes from our archives between each new one. So check out The Story Behind the Song wherever you get your podcast.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
Do you read Stephen King? Good news. There's a club for you. The Losers Club. Every Friday, us losers journey through the never-ending wastelands of King's Dominion. We sink our teeth into each of King's novels, dive deep into the lore, and review every adaptation. Even better, we're always having guests over. Thomas Jane, Will Wheaton, Mary Lambert, Mick Garris, the list goes on. So what are you waiting for? Join us as we read on through long days and pleasant nights.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks so much for checking out this series, listening to this episode here. If this is something that you're into, you know, checking out what your favorite artists are up to, I do hope you hit that subscribe button, at least before you get out of here. We'll send you brand new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday so you can keep up with all of your favorite artists and discover some new ones, know what's happening in the music world. Of course, you can find us at all the major podcast hotspots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you like to get yours, wherever you're listening from right now. I'm Kyle Meredith, and today I'm once again going to be talking with Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders. They released a brand new record this year called Hate for Sale, one of my favorite Pretenders records. Absolutely. It could have been a double album. That's what Chrissy tells us. And we'll talk about her writing with her guitarist, James Walburn, and the difference maybe in working with someone like Dan Auerbach that she did on the Alone record on the last Pretenders record. How this, plenty of points on this record, kind of musically look back to the 50s and 60s and the early days of the Pretenders. In fact, founding drummer Martin Chambers is back on the seat for the first time in a little bit. So, of course, that gives them not only history, but that early Pretender sound I was just talking about. We'll also get into that title, Hate for Sale. Chrissy will be quick to tell you that it's not about what you think it is. This is not some kind of reflection on 2020 politics, but more so speaking to people making bad decisions, being selfish. She says it's also something she's just having a little fun with that title. But we will discuss the actual word hate as a very strong word and the opposite, love, as a drug addiction. Now, through quarantine, Chrissy's been doing some Bob Dylan covers online along with James Walburn helping her out here. So we're going to talk about that Bob Dylan covers series and her appreciation for Mr. Dylan's brand new album as well. So let's get into it, discussing the record Hate for Sale. It's Kyle Meredith with Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders.
Hi.
Congratulations on Hate for Sale. This is as good as a record as I would hope it'd be. In fact, I want to say it's one of the best records that I think that you've done for your career so far.
Oh, great. Well, that's good news.
I have a feeling a lot of people are saying that, too. I mean, you and I got to talk about this record a couple years ago, obviously before it was officially announced. And, even back then, I think that you were feeling positive about it because you had said it potentially could have been a double record. I'm guessing it was just timing that kind of made that not work out. Was that the case?
Yeah, actually, I forgot about that. That's glad you brought that up. You know, we have songs that we just didn't get around to, and we wanted to get cracking and get it out and keep it short and sweet. So, yeah, but there are some songs we didn't finish, and we'll have to get on to that. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, well, no problem, especially if it means that really that they can come out, because I'm always up for more music from you. Have you ever done a double album? I'm trying to think if that's even ever happened.
No, I don't think so. No, I haven't. They've all been pretty much, I suppose, 11 tracks. I think this one's 10.
Well, it's perfect in the sense. I know one of the hooks of the, I guess the press hooks of this record is you finally finding time, as you put it, to write with James Walburn, who's been in your band for quite some time. Is there any reason why you've kept separation between who you write with and versus, you know, who you're playing with on the road?
No, not at all. We always thought we'd get together, and it's just never, you know, you're on the road and you think it's we'll get a room at the back of the bus and a couple of guitars, and you just don't. Some people might. I find when I'm on the road, but my head isn't right for it. And then we'd come off the road and take some time off, and James would get stuck into other projects, and then I'd end up going off somewhere. I don't have a studio, so I'd meet a producer I wanted to work with and go to Stockholm, Nashville, and that's just the way it worked out. Yeah, but we really were missing that, and we said, well, we're really going to sit down and do it this time.
Yeah, I had wondered if that, you know, is the cause for, again, I've loved every record that you've put out, especially over the past 20 years, you know, with a large part of that him being in the band, but I wonder if this record sounds the way it does because there is that extra comfort factor, you know, as opposed to, like, Dan Auerbach last time, who, you know, you hadn't spent as much time with, I guess.
I'm not sure that you need to spend time with someone if it's right and you go in and I could have done this with James a long time ago. I mean, with Dan, he's very immediate. It's not really a comfort thing. If anything, it's the opposite. You know, you can get too comfortable, and that's what you don't want. You want to keep it edgy. So I don't know why we didn't do it earlier. But we certainly had ideas. We just never got around to it.
Did you all talk about, you know, how it was going to sound going into it? I mean, you've mentioned before, you know, really loving R&B, and I can hear, you know, especially like in Fool and Didn't Want to Be This Lonely. I mean, that's not exactly a Bo Diddley beat. That's one of those almost versions there. But it seems like a lot of the style of music does kind of point to an era.
Well, even though James is younger, I mean, he's just turned 40. His favorite artist is Elvis Presley, and he grew up, he's one of those guys whose dad took him to see, him and his brother, just to see every band. It wouldn't matter who it was, Liza Minnelli, whatever it was, they went and saw it. And he's a real music person. He's played with Jerry Lee Lewis. He's very old school in his approach. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He just loves playing instruments, and he's amazing. And that's, we really did make a very clear plan. It's not much of a plan. It was just to return to basics. Two guitars, bass, drums, a smattering of keyboards, which he plays, and just to keep it, you know, the songs. I personally like songs you can dance to, and then just keep them with melody, choruses, you know, just very trad rock.
And there's a lot of dancing. Although I bring up, I'd mentioned Fool on there too, and it's maybe more in that, I'll Stand By You vein, the balladry. To me, that might be one of the most immediate classic-sounding songs that I feel like I've heard from you. At least, you know, I guess what I'm saying is it hit me, I guess, at the right moment at the right time. But it's such a powerful song.
With James and I, actually, on that song in particular, he had that title. I think he read it he was reading the book. And he said, listen to this, you can't hurt a fool. And I said, oh, got to write a song called that. And we really tried to craft that song in a very, you know, very old school. We really knew what we were going for, but I mean, you can't buy it in the shops. You do have to sit down and figure it out. It's always something to try to like sneak in a key change that's not obvious or that you don't really notice. So it just lifts it. You know, we really paid attention to that one in particular.
Also having Martin back in the band, back on the studio albums, does having a link, you know, back to the beginning, having so much shared history, does that put it also in any kind of state of mind, you know, in that early sounding kind of way?
It certainly puts it in a state of sound, because Martin has a very unique distinctive sound, and I mean, he's a riot to watch live. He's fantastic to play with because he's just one of the great entertaining showboaters. I think he's a real drummer's drummer. You know, he's fun. That's what's great about him. And again, I have made many albums without him. Not many. I haven't made that many albums, but that was, it's just the way it pans out sometimes. You know, again, logistics, people are doing other things, and it's been a long time. So certainly having him on this album was, it really sounds like The Pretenders because, you know, he is very instrumental to the sound.
There's a huge immediacy to a lot of these songs that I know that he has a large part in, just being, you know, the rhythm behind it really pushes it along. I love it. Last time we spoke too, you know, you'd already kind of said that you had the title in mind with Hate for Sale and were quick to correct me when I assumed it had anything to do with, you know, what was happening in the world, the administration and everything like that. And you've talked about that a bit more in the most recent interviews, you know, speaking towards, I think you said, mean-spirited commercialism. Has that idea of Hate for Sale changed for you over these past 2 years as the world has continued in the direction it's going?
No, because the world's been going in this direction for 2,000 years. I mean, it's nothing new. It certainly is escalating, and things are getting pretty crazy. And a lot of things is curveballs right, left, and center that no one saw coming. But just the whole idea of people making bad decisions and being selfish and doing the wrong thing, I'd like to say that's a new thing, but in my experience, it's a very old thing. So if anything, I mean, Hate because that was supposed to be a bit of fun, but people seem to think I'm, and also I try not to get too much into current affairs because I like the music to have a more timeless feel to it. I mean, it's not a calculated thing. We've been doing, James and I have been doing some Bob Dylan songs over the phone during the lockdown. And, you know, some of the songs we're doing are, you know, 40, 50 years old, and they sound so relevant to everything that's going on in the world today. But then they don't call him Bob Dylan for nothing.
That's true. You've actually, you sussed out a few songs that I wouldn't have imagined people really, like Don't Fall Apart on Me Tonight. I feel like you heard something that most didn't. That's a really looked over era for Bob right there. What made you tackle that one? What brought that one on?
I was looking for some of his songs that, again, have choruses that we can interpret because, you know, it'd be very easy to copy Bob's style. You know, everyone can do it. He's got such a distinctive style. So you have to really meditate on the songs and try to deliver them in a way that's, find your own voice on them, especially when you've heard them a lot. That one wasn't one of his greatest hits, I guess. So it seemed more open to interpretation, I suppose. And it had a chorus, which he didn't make much of in his version. So, you know, I tried to find things where, I'm not saying we are doing them better than Bob did, but, you know, it's nice to be able to interpret it in a way.
You don't have to say that. I'm going to say you did that one better than Bob did. And I'm a fan of that song. I'm a fan of that era, too. But, you know, complete props, because I know that's not a given. That's not easy when you've got such a classic songwriter. Have you spent much time with the new album?
Have I spent much time with the new album?
Yeah, Bob's new album. I'm sorry.
Oh, I have. I haven't listened to it. I'll sit down and listen to the whole thing in a go. I have spent some very important time with part of it. In fact, when Murder Most Foul came out, it really lifted me out of a malaise. You know, I was in kind of a weird state of mind when all this came down a few months ago. And then all of a sudden, someone sent me that song, and it just seemed, everything seemed to change from that moment. For some reason, just because, you know, it was a feeling of, I lifted me out of that feeling of being locked down. It was very freeing to hear that.
He's good at that. I'll bring it back to your record, obviously, with Hate for Sale. And I want to hit back, so I want to play the other side of the coin on that. You know, as we talked about the title and the title track not, you know, reflecting what is happening currently. Apologies if I'm reaching here. But I was thinking back to the previous record on Alone, and you had the song I Hate Myself. And I was wondering if there's sort of any kind of thread that bridges, you know, how you're, I don't know, using that word. Because, I mean, obviously hate is such a strong word, even when you're trying to have a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think probably we overuse the word hate, and we overfeel the emotion hate. There's no doubt about that, too. You know, throughout the day, you'll say, oh, I hate that, or, oh, I hate it when people say that, or, oh, I hate it, or, oh, you know, it's kind of a very common ongoing theme. I'm not sure that we use the word lightly, very flippantly. I Hate Myself on the last album was again, I that was enough. You know, to me, they're rock songs, so they have to be fun. I think that's just my take on it. You know, I mean, we all have albums we love to listen to when we're down, but I don't think anyone puts on an album to get even more depressed. You know, you usually want something to pull you up. But no, is hate a theme? maybe it is. Maybe you're telling me something of it that might. No, I've never been in therapy, but maybe I am now. I'm finding out something I didn't know.
The opposite, of course, you know, being love shows up in various ways on The Buzz in this really unique, you know, concept that you've put out there with, you know, love as a comparison to drug addiction, if I got that right. Do you find it a challenge to approach a subject with a new angle, especially something that's been written about as love has, relationships have, you know, and for as long as you've been a songwriter, is it a challenge to find a unique new angle like that?
I don't think it is a unique angle. I think that's a pretty old, that's another stock go-to. I think when Billie Holiday sang, in fact, I sang it myself on the Valbon Woe album. What was the song? I'm a Fool to Love You. I'm a Fool to Hold You. You know, that also sounded like drug addiction. I'm a Fool to Need You. Otis Redding singing, I've Been Loving You Too Long. Your love's become a habit to me. I can't stop. It sounds to me like a very, in fact, that's the beauty for me of songs is you don't necessarily know what it's about, but you sort of adapt the song to your own needs, your own emotional needs. So if you're having addiction problems, all those things can apply. Or if you're obsessively, you know, in some crazy relationship, that you know, or most relationships, I suppose. You know, one bad text that day and your day's ruined. That's like not getting a fix, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, you made it sound fresh, you know, the compliments on that. And you know, and at the expense of over-complimenting you, I will keep doing that anyway because I'm such a fan of what you do. I love this new record. It's one of my favorite releases that's came out this year. I so appreciate,
thanks.
You know, yes, you continuing to do what you're doing, Chrissy, and it's always such a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. That's what I was trying to say about Bob when I heard that. I thought, thank you, man, for just you've been with us all this time and you're still doing it. And, you know, it means a lot. So it means a lot that you say that to me.
Absolutely. It was great talking to you. Take care out there. I hope we'll see you around at some point soon.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
All right. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
My thanks, Chrissy Hine. The brand new Pretenders record is called Hate for Sale. Now, it was just 2018, a couple years ago, the first time Chrissy and I spoke. And at this point, we were going to be talking about her forthcoming book of original artwork called Adding the Blue, as well as The Environment and the 10th anniversary of the Pretenders record Break Up the Concrete, which is another favorite of mine. And this was the moment where Chrissy was telling us about the details on two new records she had in the works, Hate for Sale and a Standards record that just came out last year as well. So part two of Kyle Meredith with Pretenders.
Hello.
We are so excited to have the Pretenders back in Louisville, the Louisville Palace. That's just next week on July 3rd.
It's a homecoming for me because I lived in Louisville when I was a baby.
I had no clue about that. How have I never heard
of
that?
I forgot myself because I was a baby. But my parents always refer to it. My dad was in the Marines.
Well, I know there's some music stuff to talk about, but I feel like this year is also busy for you in the non-musical world. I wanted to ask some questions about some of the other stuff you have going on. First off, the book of art you have coming out in September called Adding the Blue, 200 original works. This is a really cool story because this is sort of a recent thing for you, right?
Well, it is and it isn't. I thought that would be what I'd be into since I was a kid because that's the one thing I could do naturally. I wasn't good at school. And then, of course, I grew up in the 60s, so I got totally waylaid by rock and roll. You know, once I started listening to the radio, that was game over for the painting. And then I went to Kent State University, but I was a dropout. I didn't really go to classes. I didn't study anything except pop and music. And then I left the States and I got into music and completely forgot about it. So just a few years ago, I thought, why am I still thinking about painting? I don't even know if I can paint. I've never done it. And I started. And once I started, I couldn't stop.
Wow. Like naturally coming back to you in a way.
Oh, well, it's just what it's like what I liked when I was a kid. So, I mean, I had to figure it out. I didn't even know how to clean my brushes. So I wrecked a few brushes along the way. And I didn't intend to put them in a book. It's this. There's this brother and sister, Catherine and Nick Roylance, and their dad had started. He was a 60s guy in London, and he had this thing called Genesis Books. And I guess he did features on the rock stars of the day and stuff. Anyway, they approached me And I gave him a few snapshots of a few of the paintings. To be honest, I wasn't really that interested in a book or anything. I was going off on tour. But when I got back, they presented me with this mock-up of the book, and it was so well thought out. And I said, you just do whatever you want. And that's what they've done now, and that's going to come out in the form of this book.
Yeah. Now, is it? Are we just looking at your paintings in this book, or is there any narrative that goes along with it?
There's a bit of, a little bit of narrative where they just, kind of talk you through a few of the. So a little bit.
And there's two examples out there for us to look at, and they're really good. I mean, they're really cool. I don't have the proper lexicon, I think, to talk art completely, but
neither do I, man. I don't know anything about the art world. I'm not particularly interested in it. I mean, I love paintings like everyone else. I'm in Philadelphia. I might go to a museum today, but I forget to go to museums or galleries. It's not really my scene, but sometimes I enjoy it. To be perfectly honest, I look at a lot of this stuff and I just think you're just a phony. I don't get a lot of these installations and things. I think, sorry, but that's me. I'm in a rock band. So part of my job is to be real cynical about everything. But for me, any form of art, whether it's music or art, it, the purpose of it is to lift me, not to disturb me. I feel I'm already disturbed. So, But it doesn't even need to be thought-provoking. It's supposed to just light the room up a little bit. But that's just my opinion.
What I'll notice, though, the one thing that is sort of obvious on it, just judging by those two that's out there, is they're sort of completely different in style. And I guess that's what I was impressed by. Like, are you drawn to painting in one sort of way, or is it just, I don't know, where the brush takes you?
Yeah, I just get a blank canvas and start stabbing away at it. I don't have any preconceived. I started painting, it sounds very elementary, and it is. I started painting flowers because they're beautiful and it gave me something to focus on. And I tried not to do too many portraits because that's kind of my natural propensity is to do that. And I thought, well, that's going to be too easy. And also with photography, we don't need portraits. But I kept doing those because they're like a natural thing, and I find it's kind of a meditation for me. I just get into it, do it for 4 hours, and then leave the house and go have a sandwich or something. But, yeah, it's just a hobby.
Well, I think there's something else, and I'll jump to the next subject here that's not a hobby, something you've been very proud to talk about throughout your career, and that's animal rights. I was reading through your, I think it was Facebook or something the other day, and you were talking about a project that had to do with cows.
Yeah, it's my cow protection thing. This is kind of what it's all leading up to and what I've been into for the last 40 years, really. And it's about, it's ancient Vedic culture, which is where yoga, all these good practices that are pretty commonplace these days, vegetarianism, this, where the cow is considered holy. It's definitely been lost in our current culture, but I think we can bring it back. It's about small farming, and the four principles of cow protection is, number one, you never kill a cow. Number two, calves must suckle from their mothers as long as they need to, 6 months or whatever. That's not how it works on an industrial farm, and that's what the vegans have a problem with. But I'm not talking about industrial farming. I'm talking about small farms. Number three, the cows should be milked by hand. And number four is that the oxen have to be given meaningful work, i.e. plowing the fields. Now, the first benefit of this very small farming, where nothing gets hurt and the cows are retired back into the herd, and they don't have to be impregnated every year. It's a very natural, there's no artificial insemination. It's self-sustaining. It's not a profit-making thing, so you'll never find any industry jumping onto it like they have with the vegan thing, because they can't produce it cheaply. This is a self-sustaining just for the family that has the cows in the local community. But the thing that's really important about it right now is that globally we're losing all our topsoil, and any environmentalist knows about this. Anyone knows about it because everyone goes on the internet. But the topsoil is what we need to plant crops, and if we don't have any, we're all going to starve. So the great thing about this small farming situation with cows is that, unlike when you put 10,000 in a warehouse and they create methane gas, which is what everyone's talking about, if you have just, 12 cows eating grass that we can't eat, they produce cow manure or dung, and that is what restores the topsoil. So if we start getting these small farms, we can correct the problem of the topsoil, and that's really what it's all about.
That's what caught my eye and ear when the conversation started, was the environmental impact of, you know, just eating meat at all, you know, beyond even, you know, what you're getting at with here. It's just the environmental impact, I think, was, it blew my mind.
Well, I mean, meat eating is so far behind me now. That's been over 40 years, where that's way in my past.
Right.
I mean, we're so far ahead of that now. That's like a, that's like smoking, you know.
Right.
Who does it now?
Right.
You know, it's you know, I mean, and that, again, number one principle of cop protection is you never kill them.
Uh-huh.
So that's just not, doesn't feature into anything really in an intelligent argument of anything. So
it's
certainly not environmentally. It's the number one enemy on this planet at the moment of what's how we've devastated the, you know, everything, the topsoil, the rainforest. It's all been chopped down for meat eaters. So stop it.
I mean, it's got to feel like such an uphill battle to get this conversation out there.
It's not only is it uphill, but I'm bored stupid of this subject because I've been going on about it for 40 years. But, you know, then also it's my subject. And it's, you know, if you had one of those game shows where you have a panel, you know, what's your subject? That would be my subject.
That's
so, you know, I keep getting drawn into it.
Well, I appreciate you enlightening me a little bit more. I do apologize then for, you know, going over well-tread ground there. So
no problem. I mean, you know, I'm writing a book on it, or I'm getting someone to help me to get some of the research on the history of cows throughout human history. And, you know, I've actually been dropped by one of the animal rights groups that I was a patron of for 25, 30 years because they're all anti-milk now. But I would like to qualify that by saying they're anti-milk because of industrial farming. And when you buy commercial milk, you are buying it from the meat industry. But what I'm talking about is the opposite of that.
This might play a little bit into, I've heard you talking about new music a little bit as well. And the record you're working on, the title's called Hate for Sale?
Oh, no. Well, that's not going to happen yet. That's going to be next year. That's just the stuff that I'm writing with James Wolver, my guitar player. Yes, that is the title. But the next album I have coming out is called Valve Bone Woe, and that's a sort of jazz dub thing. That'll be out in the beginning of next year.
Oh, cool. What's are you working on someone with that one? That's
finished. That I've been working on that for years because the guy I'm working with, Marius DeFries, lives in L.A. He's English, but he lives over there. So we just haven't, you know, I've done two albums and written a book in the amount of time that since we started that, but it's finally getting, well, finished. So that should be out at the end of, beginning of next year.
I'm really interested to hear that. I mean, the way you describe that with the genres there, that seems like I know you're always, you know, striving to try out new sounds.
Well, you know, actually I'm not. I'm pretty lazy and I just keep doing the same thing. You know, I think I'm on the spectrum, you know, dunk, 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 dunk. I just do the same thing over and over, but you know, a new song always has, it's, you know, like the next day in your life, you know, you're still alive, so keep expressing it. But this thing was started as I did a song in a film called The Eye of the Beholder, which had Ashley Judd and Ewan McGregor in it, and this is about 15 years ago. And it was a version of a song called I Wish You Love. It's a French writer called Charles Trenet in English. I mean, actually, I'm doing it in French for this album, but that took me 30 years to learn how to do. But it's with a big orchestra, and it's kind of electronic. If you could find that song, I Wish You Love, from The Eye of the Beholder, and that's, I think it was on a Pretenders album too. But so it's more of that, you know, it's kind of trippy jazz, but with this kind of, I don't know, psychedelic trance music arrangements and a big orchestra. It's pretty far out.
No, if you don't mind, I'd still like to ask a little bit about the one that comes after that then, because, and I'm, it's sort of enticing, that title, Hate for Sale. Maybe it's low-hanging fruit for our times right now.
Well, I don't know why everyone's saying that we're living through dark times, because, you know, I've just got from San Francisco, I'm in Philadelphia, I've had a great experience here. I think we're in much better shape than we've been in for years. I'm not talking about any administrations, I'm talking about where we are, you know, just socially. Gays can get married. I mean, it's no longer, you know, if I was gay, you would only associate me with being a gay singer, a lesbian singer over the last 30 years. But in the last 3 years, if someone is gay, no one even mentions it anymore. You know, it's a huge, huge stride forward for the whole gay community. Like, everyone can relax now because really it's not an issue anymore. It's accepted. It's normal. And everyone's cool with it. And nobody's labeled by it anymore. I mean, I know this is early days for that, but that's what I've seen. You know, you can open a fashion magazine and see girls sitting holding hands in the front row, and no one says lesbian couple. They just say, oh, you know, they're going out with each other. We've had a black president. I mean, huge stride forward. In California, pot's legal. You know, I knew guys that went down for you know, dealing pot and being arrested for pot. We all did. Yeah. I mean, we weren't all arrested for it, but we all smoked it and it was always illegal. So, I mean, there's been really significant positive. I mean, I walked around Philadelphia yesterday and there was a lot of great little organic cafes and things. I was in an airport 2 days ago and I could get something to eat. I haven't been able to get anything to eat in an airport for 30 years. So I think we're in really good shape. I don't know why everyone says it's dark. It's not dark, it's light.
Well, I know it's, for me, it's easy to get caught up in the sensationalistic headlines that get out there. Although I appreciate this because, you know, David Byrne has been talking about something similar. He does his weekly reason to be optimistic or whatever he calls it. But, you know, it would beg to question then, does that title come from anywhere else specifically then?
The Hate for Sale, it sounds kind of like a damned song. It's, a rocker. And what is it? Hate for Sale. He's got a curly tongue and a curly tail. You know, it's just talking about, in general, this kind of mean-spirited commercialism, I suppose.
Well, and the fact that, you know, it's potentially a double album, for fans, that's seriously exciting.
Yeah, well, that depends if we get enough time to, I mean, James and I started demos, but when we're offered tours, we always down tools and want to go on tour because we love going on tour. So, but, well, once we get that together, I want to record it. I mean, we only need a couple of weeks to record something, and we will record it with this band, which I haven't done in the last two albums because people have been busy doing other things, but this is... If I can nail them down for 2 weeks, we can record it with the band you're going to see.
And now, do you know, there was one record now that was just under your own name with Chrissy Hynde. Do you think that this is a Pretenders record or a solo record? Have you thought that far ahead?
Chrissy Hynde thing was just, I was so tired of explaining that I work with the band and everyone said, yeah, but it's just you. And I was like, well, no, it's not. And then I thought, okay, call it what you want. But it's always, I always work with the band. Now I'm having to explain it the other way around. Certainly the Valve Bone Woe album, which is coming out, the Jazz Doe album, that's not a Pretenders thing. Although James Wolburn does play on it, my guitar player. Mm-hmm. So, you know, nobody in any band has ever stayed together for 40 years. They fall out with each other in a way because my original band, two members died after we made our second album. I've kind of kept the music alive in the spirit of the band and kept the sound. But, you know, it doesn't happen to everyone, thankfully. But most bands do split. They go off and do other things. And, you know, I'm no different. But I only work in the context of a band.
Well, I was listening back to one of those recent records, Break Up the Concrete, because it is the 10th anniversary year. Look at that. And I saw you mention that you might be doing a re-release. I didn't know if that was just because it was out of issue or you were thinking about expanding it or what. But it's a good record.
I just never saw it for a while. I think, is it out of...
Oh, I think it's still available.
Or something, or whatever they call it, that they deleted it. I don't know. I love that album because that was recorded with James Wolburn and Nick Wilkinson. Martin Chambers wasn't on that just because we did it in 11 days and we pulled it together very quickly. And Jim Keltner, who's, as everyone knows, is one of the great drummers of all time. He played on it, and that allowed us to do it very quickly because he's a genius. And that's the way we'll record this next album, with the band in the studio. It's what we call live recording. I mean, it's not live like a live gig, but, you do three takes of the song, take the best one, and then there you go, on to the next one.
Well, I can give you the compliments on that record, too. I mean, especially that 1-2 punch right at the beginning of Boots of Chinese Plastic and The Nothing Maker, two of the strongest songs, to kick off a record. I do love those. So,
We'll bring them back. We'll bring them back for next year.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That really would. In the meantime, we also have a mutual a friend, you more so for you, more of an acquaintance for me, and Richard Swift. And I was really happy to see you out there kind of pushing to help him out, too. So,
do you know Richard?
I've met him. We have a lot of mutual friends, and I've been such an admirer of his. So, I'm the one that anytime I have been around him, saying like, "Hey, where's that solo record? Where's that next solo record?" Because I love his music so much.
Yeah, Swift was working on a solo record, and he sent me some tracks, and they're just fantastic. One of the most talented and loveliest guys I've ever met, and a real right hand man to Dan Arbuck, who was his best friend. And in fact, when we were in the studio doing the Alone album, Richard took a couple of, we call him Swift, took a couple pictures on his phone. And I said, "You're going to do all the photography for this." And then I saw him doing some drawings. I said, "And you're doing all the artwork." So all of our just all around super talented, and he's not very well, and I'm not really sure that he's going to get through this. So I would love to think that everyone could at least put in a nice thought for Richard and wish him well now.
That's I really hope so too. It's I didn't know the state of it. It's really heartbreaking. It really, really is. Such amazing.
Well, he's 41 years old, and you know, he's got three teenage daughters, and they're all lovely. You know, he's a lovely guy. I never saw him in any way as a negative or a dark person, but he's, you know, a life of excess really caught up with him fast. So let's all the best to Swift and hope he gets through this.
Yeah, same here. I don't want to end it right there on that kind of dark note anyway, but
it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, you brought up Dan and that record too. The Alone record was so good. I know he's working tons now in his studio. Do you foresee you doing anything down there on his side of things? Have you guys talked about that?
I would work with Dan in a heartbeat at any time. I just love him. I love him as a guy. I love his musical sensibility. He's a great guitar player, which is what attracted me to him in the first place, of course. And, you know, he's just fun. He never gets rattled. He's upset at the moment, obviously, because of our friend. But, I knew his parents from Akron, Ohio before. I left Akron before he was even born. But when I'm with Dan, I always feel like he's older than me. He's just got something that's very authoritative. And, I'd do anything with Dan at any time.
I heard his dad's actually got a record coming out. You mentioned his parents there. Chuck.
Oh, really?
Chuck Auerbach. Yeah, Dan's going to be releasing a Chuck record. So
amazing. Yeah. Well, Dan works with, he got Dwayne Eddy on my record.
Oh, right. Which, awesome, you know? It's just having that crew
amazing.
Down there. Yeah.
Although I would warn anyone that listens to the Alone album, although it's great, and Swift is all over it, and Dan's playing guitar on it, it's a blast. But my voice isn't very good, just a warning. Because I had bronchitis, I could hardly talk. And I said to Danny when I got in, I said, how am I going to sing? I can't even talk. And he goes, don't worry about it. We'll do it in the last 3 days. It'll make it sound cohesive. So, you know, if you hear me choking on some of those songs, you'll know why.
You know, it never even occurred to me. I've heard that record dozens of times. I never once thought, but her voice. You know, just didn't occur.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a very good. I wasn't a fine voice. I'm hoping I'll be in a better voice when I get to Louisville.
We're looking forward to it again, July 3rd at the Louisville Palace. We share a wall with it, so it's going to be an easy trek for me. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. This has really been an honor for me, and I cannot wait to catch the show.
Nice. We can't wait ourselves. So thank you, and we look forward to it.
All right. Take care, Chrissy.
Cheers.
All right, bye. A 2018 interview there with Chrissy Hine. Again, the brand new Pretenders record is called Hate for Sale. So thanks for Chrissy for the conversation today. Thanks to you for checking out this episode. Before you get out, I do hope you'll hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening from or in any of the major podcast hotspots like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, even YouTube. You can subscribe over there as well. We'll bring you brand new interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And after that, head over to WFPK.org where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, and bonus interviews, 6 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday at WFPK.org. Consequence of Sound has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Kyle Meredith on all three of those. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.